Good evening and welcome to 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day, a show that's willing to consider the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything for a community utilizing synchronicity as a way to make sense of a strange and beautiful universe. Today is April 9th. And this is episode number 79. I am Douglas Bowles, and tonight we'll see what those aliens in the backyard are up to.
And unlock their secrets with synchro. Hello, I'm Will Morgan, and tonight on 42 Minutes, we're speaking with Trish and Rob McGregor, professional writers of both fiction and nonfiction for some 25 years. Most recently, they have written a number of nonfiction books, actually, on synchronicity. The latest, I think it was published in February, is entitled Aliens in the Backyard. They are also the authors of a whole grip of fiction books written for various audiences and age groups. It's insane. More information about their work and their different projects can be found at their website, synchrosecrets.com. How are you guys tonight?
We're good. We're waiting for some synchros.
After reading your piece in the Sync book, you guys use synchronicity as an investigation tool. Is this correct?
Yeah, I think you could say that.
That's what really happened on that trip. We just went off to Chile with leaving things up in the air where we're going to go, what we're going to do, and it just followed the trail of synchronicity, and it turned out to be something very interesting.
And that was a number of years ago. Would you say that one trip kind of created a path for your whole career?
I think it created a path for our whole marriage. That was our honeymoon.
And how many years ago was that?
1983.
Wow, that's a wonderful – I can't believe that. That's crazy. But you guys, I mean, that is an adventure. You guys were setting out with really no expectations whatsoever. But what was it in your lives? I mean, did it this whole interest in synchronicity, was this something that was a thing that you guys had in common from the jump, or was this something that you guys developed together?
One of the first questions that Trish asked me when I met her, and I was interviewing her, actually. I was working as a newspaper reporter for a daily paper in South Florida. And she was working, teaching Cuban refugees English, and I was writing an article. It was about 3 years after the Mario boat lift, where 100,000 Cubans came into South Florida, and just seeing what was happening to them. Were they learning English? Were they just becoming part of the Cuban communities and not becoming a part of the larger culture? And so I interviewed Trish, and afterwards, we were talking, and one of the first things she asked me is, she said, have you ever heard of the word, do you know what synchronicity is? And fortunately, I did.
I wouldn't have gotten there.
Well, so one of the things that I noticed in your piece in the Sync Book Volume 2 is something that I don't know if I've ever come across. You say synchronicity, then, is where the implicate and the explicate, the inner and the outer, coincide. And for all we know, an alien abduction may be one of the events that occurs at the border between the two.
That's true. That's what we think. Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, it's 11:30, and this is my problem. The implicate and the explicate, that's actually from David Bohm, the physicist. He was the one who felt that everything, including time, unfolds out of the implicate or enfolded order. In other words, you know, beneath our daily lives, there's some sort of order.
Another
primal order.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
A deeper reality.
Yeah, and I think that's what we see when we experience synchronicities. It's that enfolded order seeping into our lives.
Now, so here's an interesting direction. So you guys are interested in kind of the what you would call high strangeness, and I am too, and I'm a bit of a writer myself, but there's this guy named Whitley Strieber who wrote books about different monsters and things, and then all of a sudden the aliens came to him.
It's weird because his is the same. His stance in that book, however, is very similar to what they're saying, though. I don't know if you guys would agree that there's this confusion on where the contact with alien lies, like what kind of dream state that's in. And
I can remember when I first saw Strieber's book in a bookstore. It was in 1987. It was a little professor bookstore, you know, that chain that doesn't even exist anymore. And I just stood there looking at this cover. I thought, oh, my God, I think I have to buy this book. You know, it was just some sort of reaction to that illustration. I found the book absolutely fascinating. I mean, Strieber's such a good writer that he can describe these inner states, I think, in ways that other people can't. Regardless, you know, he still seems to be sitting on the fence about what exactly it is. I mean, he doesn't say they're from outer space.
Right.
You know,
he calls them the visitors. He specifically calls them.
They may be from inner space, you know.
Right.
They may be associated with the dead.
Well, this is where the two meet, right? With the whole aliens and the synchronicity seem to be part of the same educational force.
Right. I mean,
where do you guys see, what are we leading up to then in that case?
You know, I was just reading tonight in another book that I bought, and this woman is a Jungian therapist, and she feels, and I think I agree with her, she feels that the proliferation of sightings and abductions, really what it's leading to, and of course this awareness of synchronicity, what it's leading to is a new paradigm, a new way of being.
Last week we talked to a woman who had a similar it's interesting because I didn't even think about it till just now, where because of our scientific materialistic beliefs in our society now, there's no place for the supernatural to go. So
right.
in this realm it was the darkness, and it's the vampires, the zombies, and the monsters. So that's where you would have a transcendent experience, in the darkness. But there's this other side of the coin where science fiction also is, you know, so we need some place to have a transcendent supernatural experience. You know, another way to do that possibly is UFOs.
Right.
Well, you know, Doug, it's funny because I love the Men in Black. Like in pop culture, the Men in Black is so bright and vivid. And I like how this piece that you guys did with the UFOs and synchros, it throws back to that Men in Black being a ghost, being a wizard, being an alien altogether. I'm sorry.
That was out of left field.
This is something I picked up on. But.
No, we're fascinated by the MIB thing too.
And we had an experience in Chile. We went to the island of Chiloé, which is where our synchronicities led us to, and investigating a ghost ship, the Caliuchi. And what was fascinating about this ghost ship was that so many of the people on this island believe that it existed, but not only that, but that the ghost ship has a crew that comes ashore and confronts people and abducts people, sometimes disappearing. For one man disappeared for 50 years and reappeared on his porch, his childhood porch, wearing the same clothes that he was wearing when he disappeared 50 years ago. And they asked him, "Where were you?" And he said, "On a boat. And don't ask me anymore." Or
I'm not going there.
The whole thing is so similar to the MIB.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Because they're described basically as dressed in black. Usually blonde men, tall blonde men dressed in black, and walking up to people's houses and making demands from them, or sometimes abducting the residents.
It's funny because I wonder about these Chileans recognizing those Men in Black, and like if they saw American pop culture, it seems to be like. Movies, The Knowing, and I mean, even The Matrix and whatnot has the same archetype.
Think about it. This was in 1983, before any of that pop culture stuff.
Well, it goes back to, like you said, it's a Jungian symbol almost.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, we had a strange MIB experience. We used to cover the, we used to do freelance writing for Omni magazine.
And wow.
They sent us to a couple of UFO conferences, and we went to one in Hollywood, Florida, where Betty Hill and Bud Hopkins were the primary speakers. And
Bud, the Hill abduction, and then and then the Hops, who was up in New York with all of his hypnosis. I think he had something to do with Strieber, actually.
Yeah, he did. And, I mean, his book, Missing Time, was probably another big piece of the puzzle. And then he did Intruders. Well, the funny thing was, Bud had been on the radio that morning and was talking to a woman who he felt was an abductee. And the problem, he wanted to go do a hypnosis session with her, but he didn't have a car. So we offered to drive him miles away, and it was fascinating. And over the period of that weekend, we spent time with Betty Hill, and of course saw this abduction with Bud, or saw this hypnosis session that Bud did with this abductee. And what was it, about 2 weeks later when we had the MIB?
Yeah,
well, with the Domers.
Yeah, we invited the couple to come to our house, a little party of people who were interested in these subjects. And we were sitting around in our living room. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning talking. And suddenly I looked to the sliding glass doors that led out to our porch and into a parking lot. And there's a man dressed in black standing at the door. At the door, and we, this is what we had been talking about. And I get up, and he sees me and backs away. And I go to the door, and I see him out in the parking lot. He's acting very oddly. He could have just disappeared into the night very simply. But instead, he would run between cars, running low, ducking down, stopping, and then looking back over his shoulder at me, running to the next car, acting very oddly.
So yeah, it's like something out of a movie. It's just something out of a cartoon almost.
Right.
Yeah, cartoonish. We called the police, and amazingly, usually something like this, maybe in a half an hour, we might get a squad car come by. Within 5 minutes, there must have been seven or eight cars shooting into this development where we lived, and going and asking.
They had police dogs.
Yeah, I mean, police dogs are really searching for this guy, and we found out. what we found out was that there was had been a murder about a mile away, about within an hour, and they were searching for this person, and then we called in. So that was what why the response came, but we never. Never found him, and we never figured out what that was about, but it was strange synchronicity.
So, classic.
To my original question, that was kind of the direction I was headed, where it seems like sometimes the kind of stuff that you are interested in, you begin manifesting, or you draw it to you. Or so was that your only UFO-type experience?
No, we had... We've had some strange things happen.
Yeah. When we
you guys are free to talk about them here. Just
this is pretty strange. So when we first met, we both had interests in the paranormal, psychic matters, but we lived in realms at the time where we were kind of isolated. We didn't have anybody to talk to about it. And then we met each other. Suddenly we found somebody else who was interested in the same subject, because we had been both surrounded by people who had no interest in it. And so one day I said, Trish, why don't we get a Ouija board to see what happens? So we go out to a game store, buy one. And that night, we try it, and at first, nothing happens much. It starts moving a little bit, and then suddenly, it, like, takes off. It starts moving around, and I'm saying, Trish, are you pushing this? I said, no. Are you pushing it? I said, no. And so we said, who is this? And we got this name, Adahi, A-D-A-H.
H-E or something.
H-E, yeah, right. And we said, okay. We said, who are you? And they said... They're on a craft, like aliens in a craft. And I thought, oh yeah, sure. And I was working as a reporter then. I had to be early in the morning, but I said, well, give us some evidence, give us some proof that you're actually on a UFO and communicating through a Ouija board. And so the message we got was, go to the airport tonight and you'll see us. So
we did.
We went down to the Fort Lauderdale airport. At that time, it was kind of a small airport, and you could drive right up to the fence and just watch the airplanes take off. And so we were out there between like 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, watching, nothing happened. And so we both go home, and I had to be to work early in the morning. I had an assignment at a school board meeting. I had to call in the story by 10 o'clock, and then I came in, and I had to follow it up with more detail. So I was typing, and to meet the deadline. And the reporter next to me was also on a deadline story, and we both finished about the same time. And I looked over at her, and I said, "What are you working on?" And she said, "A UFO story. The sheriff, Broward sheriff officer, saw a UFO over Perry Airport." Well, Perry Airport's about 10 miles from Fort Lauderdale Airport. We're at the wrong airport. And the reporter next to me wrote the story, and it ended up on mine was buried, and hers was on the front page of the paper. Oh. So that night, this isn't the end of the story. That night, we got together again and went to Perry Airport. So we sat out there for an hour, and this small airport was totally dark, no lights at all. And again, nothing happened. So we felt a little disappointed, and we went off in our individual cars. And I turned on the radio, and I hear something odd on an FM station. I pick up an old radio drama, style drama that you don't hear anymore, you know, like from the 30s. And I listen, and one of the main characters is an alien.
So it's just a whole slew of synchronicities like that.
Right. Right. So, but once again, it never really confirms anything. It just kind of like leads you to certain conclusions.
It's the trickster element.
It really is.
Yeah. Well done. Well said.
And, you know, that may be like what you were saying, that when you start delving into something, you attract what you're focusing on.
Yeah, it seems like there was the secret, the new age, that new age, and so that was, it's something that came out of new thought, kind of this law of attraction thing.
Yeah, but I think it's a lot more than that. Law of attraction is kind of too simple.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's just so many deeper layers to it.
Well, it's like you try to do the law of attraction thing, you want money,
right?
Then all of a sudden you'll get like, you know, a monopoly or a whole, you'll find this random stack of monopoly money. Like it will,
trickster stuff.
Right, exactly. It will always have that sense of humor, and then it will always, it just seems to be part of human development. Like we somehow know the answers and we show ourselves the answers. We've talked to one gentleman on this show, Mr. Gibbs Williams, and our doctor.
All right.
And, you know, he demystifies it. He says that it's all, I don't know, man. There seems to be something more going on. And there seems to be things that I only notice in retrospect. Like, I'll think back and I'm like, oh, that was a blatant. Like, I was getting confirmation right there, really blatant, and I didn't even see it. And
yeah, he demystifies it too much for my taste.
Yeah.
But I still find it useful. I mean, it's just data, really.
Sure.
Right.
Everybody's different take on it is useful.
Yes, that's true. We're all the same, too.
Your take in particular in the Sync book is particularly very fun. I really liked...
It's adventurous.
Yeah. So there is kind of like this Indiana Jones quality where you guys are going on an adventure and you're going into the heart of some new thing. But I've got to say that I'm a little nervous to read the larger expanded... Because I have a feeling this is kind of like an entry into... Aliens in the Backyard a little bit.
In fact, it's the first chapter.
Okay. Because, I mean, to sustain that kind of focus for the course of a book, I think I would get a little bit anxious that I was going to start strange attracting lights or aliens in the backyard, say.
the way we got into this story actually was a synchronicity itself. There was a man in Quebec who had an experience, unusual experience, that was very frightening for him, because he didn't believe in anything related to UFOs or aliens. He just thought it was something from the movies or television, and that if there were really aliens and UFOs that were actually related to physical manifestations, that the U.S. Government and military would have told us about it long ago. Was his
a little naive, but
that was his belief. So he and his wife had this experience early one morning in their backyard, and he, after that, he was totally in shock, and his whole life was turned upside down. His whole sense of reality. I mean, to the point where a couple times he talked about committing suicide. It was just hard for him to comprehend. And one synchronicity after another was happening to him. Then finally, about a year after his experience, he walked into a bookstore in Montreal. Now, this guy doesn't buy books, doesn't go into bookstores, because he works in the aeronautical industry in Montreal, and his job is reading all day long. So he doesn't tend to go into bookstores and buy books. But he had an impulse to go in there. He picked up one book, and it was The Seven Secrets of Synchronicity, our book, and he bought it. He went home, wow, and he started reading it, and he put it down, went to his computer, and Googled the term UFOs and synchronicity. And what came up was this illustration that was very similar to these beams of light, craft with beams of light coming down, very similar to what he had seen in his backyard with his wife at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then he looks over and sees that this blog where this illustration he was looking at was, the blog is
our blog.
Is our blog by the authors of the book he's reading.
So that's why he got in touch with us.
And he knew that at that point he had to get in touch with us and tell us the story. And so that was the entry point for us. And he told us in great detail of the event and all the he kept like a diary of things that were happening to him, one synchronicity after another. And so that's a part of this book.
So then, as coming from like a rational materialist culture, do you believe like that he really sees these things? Are these things that are really happening, or is this happening in him alone?
Well, he had some sort of experience. I mean, he saw something in his backyard, which was a craft. It was beams of light, and within the light was a craft. Now, you know, it's like when if you talk to an abductee, for instance, we have one story in the book about a woman and her young son who were on I-75 moving from Atlanta to St. Augustine. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they weren't on I-75 anymore. They were on just a grid of roads where there were no buildings. Anyway, what happened was they found themselves on Warner Robins Air Force Base, on their knees, sobbing hysterically, while three military guys and three grays stood around. One of the military guys had a gun at the woman's head. And suddenly they were in their car, lost in this grid of whatever it was, streets and no houses, no buildings. And, you know, okay, so how did this woman who was driving this big old heavy-duty Oldsmobile get onto a military base? Or was this some sort of screen memory? Was it,
right?
You know, I mean, she was in her car. She wasn't asleep. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like she went to bed and had a dream.
Right. Because that's the skeptics often say, well, this is something that happens during your sleep, like when you have experience where you can't move, a sleep paralysis, right, and you're not being abducted. It's just a process of the brain. But all the characters that we wrote about, these people were awake when they had their experiences, and none of them were hypnotized.
To recover memories.
They had
that's important.
What they remembered is what they remembered.
That's
it wasn't,
important.
Yeah, it is.
Because a lot of the big ones are usually post, like, hypnotic. And so that's always a little bit tainted. But a straight,
right.
To me, that's money. I mean,
yeah, right.
It's just interesting.
Well, now, Will, you've seen some lights, haven't you?
Yeah, but I mean, it's never been anything. It's just I've always been obsessed with Freudian subjects since I was a kid. And I don't know if but I don't have like the typical abductee where there's missing time or,
uh-huh.
And I'm like very frightened of that state anyways, but I'm more or less not too neurotic or anything. So I don't think that I'm like actually like searching out an alien encounter, but it's always something that's interested me. But the more you study it, the more you realize it, like, the majority of the abductee cases that I've read about have been, the memory resurfaced after hypnosis.
Yeah, no, not with any of these people. I mean, we even have a story in here about a missing pregnancy.
Right,
and
that's common.
I find that horrifying.
That's very traumatic.
All the stories, yeah, that would scare me the most. You know, you're told you're pregnant, and suddenly you have this period of missing time with these two weirdos in a bar restaurant in the middle of the fog, and then you're not pregnant anymore. I mean, that's weird.
It's very frightening. But I mean, it's interesting. I don't know. I find that, like we were discussing the screen memories and mm-hmm. how that translates in your piece with the Chileans,
right?
How they described the men in black were shapeshifters who could change into wolves and stuff like that.
You right. could even change into logs.
And so what is the Kaliuchi? What is that ship? Maybe it's what we would see as a UFO. They see it as a ghost ship because
right.
of their culture.
Right.
One of the things that in our book, the people mostly are not happy campers. They didn't like their abduction experiences. But what we've been finding in these interviews that we've been doing on with different podcasts and radio stations is that there's a whole group of people, especially people related, very interested in exopolitics and disclosure, that have a very different view that I find somewhat naive, in that they feel that these experiences are beneficial.
That the aliens are here to help.
That the aliens are here to help. And what we think is that it's not that black and white. It's not one or the other. That there are probably different levels of different races and with different perspectives.
And that they may not be alien at all.
Exactly. That they could be interdimensional, they could be us from the future, who knows?
Right.
And anybody who says, you know, they're a UFO investigator expert, that's fine, but nobody has the answers because
nobody knows.
Nobody really knows.
Well, it's just funny because our pop culture, you know, I hate to throw it back to pop culture, but that's just what I do. It links all of these together just like it does in your own experience. I mean, you were talking to aliens through a Ouija board. And
right, exactly.
Right. So there's a lot of connections to how you guys, through synchronicity, have understood the alien encounter has something to do with spirituality, has something to do with synchronicities. And that comes through in the pop culture. And like Signs, that movie Signs, where you have the synchronicity and the signs and the alien theme all like batting around it in the same little area. And then with the dead, that comes up often enough. I mean, like Jodie Foster, when she travels in Contact, she meets
right.
her dead father, who is like...
Exactly.
Right. Very
seance-y. And when you think about that, it's pretty weird because Carl Sagan thought it was all... He didn't believe any of it. And he wrote the book.
Well, apparently H.P. Lovecraft also didn't believe any of it. And he also wrote, he created this whole universe of weirdness and monsters and...
Right.
Right.
Satanist.
It's like, it's okay in fiction, but don't talk to me about it. It's nonfiction.
Well, that's what's fascinating about you as writers. putting one foot on both sides of the fence, as it were,
mm-hmm.
to work. And I'm curious about your writing practice a little bit. You know, do you...
In what way?
Do you write every day? Do you write every day?
Yeah,
we do.
Basically, that's what our daughter asked us the other day when she was visiting us. She's 23, lives on her own now, and she says, "Do you guys write every day?" And yeah, we do. But not, you know, we don't have any set schedule. I tend to like to work early in the morning. Trish tends to work late at night. So, you know, and we have different, you know, things that distract us during the day, and the evenings hours are good for both of us. But so, yeah, it's just something that it's what we do when we're at home for the most part.
See, we started out and neither one of us liked our jobs. So we said, okay, we're going to either make this work or we're probably going to die young.
Yeah. Trish quit her job teaching. I quit my newspaper job, and we had $5,000 saved. And we started freelance writing magazine articles. And we were fortunate that we started selling articles, but the pay was bad, and the pay was very infrequent and very slow coming. And but finally, after a year, Trish sold her first novel in Shadow, and I got a nonfiction project, ghostwriting a nonfiction book for an executive in Washington, D.C. And we had taken part-time jobs because our $5,000 ran out pretty quickly. And this was after a year. We immediately quit those two jobs again. And when we got these two book projects, and that was 1985. We've been on our own since then.
So what's a good day writing? How many hours is?
Well, for me, I tend to, when I plug into something, I tend to stick with it until I can't keep my eyes open anymore. But that's not every day. I'd say probably six to eight hours.
Oh, I see.
Wow.
I see. Yeah,
It depends exactly what we're working on. You know, if there's something that we're give us a deadline and we really
yeah.
work.
Are you guys inspired to do fiction? Do you have any like big plans for like to try to get these ideas passed on through fiction to like maybe a younger generation or whatever? I know that your experiences with fiction has a wide range, but if I don't remember my information incorrectly, you guys have done consignments for major franchises before, like Indiana Jones and so forth.
Right. So, yeah. And
talk about Indiana Jones.
That's what we're really asking about. Screw the way I phrased it. That's what we're not just...
I wrote seven Indiana Jones novels. The first one was The Last Crusade, and it was just something that I was asked to write the Last Crusade. That came about because of another project I had done, and the editor that I was working with said, "Would you like to adapt the script to the next Indiana Jones movie, which was Indiana Jones Last Crusade?" And I said, "Of course, sure." And so that ended up on the New York Times bestseller list for a number of weeks. And then Lucasfilm asked me if I would like to write some original Indiana Jones novels, which hadn't been done up to that point. So I started work on those, and I wrote six of those. And I don't know how I did it, because I had 4-month deadlines for every book. And the day I finished the one, I would have to get right back to work on the next one. And a lot of research, because Indy, of course, is a world traveler. He goes all over. And fortunately, I had done a lot of international travel myself, and I'd always had an interest in the going to the ruins, the archaeological sites. I had started out as studying anthropology and archaeology in college before I switched to journalism in my junior year. So it was an interest of mine. It fit perfectly.
Indiana mythology. I mean, you created what some fans of Indiana would consider to be Indiana's story.
His backstory,
that's from, for sure.
Backstory from the movies. The one thing they said, let's not do any stories that take place at the time of the movies, but let's go back to the 1920s after he's out of college, and let's see what his history is. And so that's all the guidelines I had. And
there was something about Marion.
Oh yeah, yeah. I couldn't use Marion in the book, any of the books. So that was wow.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's just left ball. Left field. That kind of screwed up my process. Why would they say Marion in particular? No, that's terribly interesting. I mean, did you ever bring anything about UFOs or anything into that storyline or any of those storylines? Because, I mean, that's what ended up happening on the last movie, so I'm just curious.
Right.
Yeah. It was interesting. When I got involved, my only novel up to that point, my only original novel, had been a novel called Crystal Skull. That was my first one, and that was the one that...
Shut up!
and that's what Lucas got as a reference to who was writing The Last Crusade. And then when the last movie was coming out, I heard an interview with him, and he said, I've had this idea of writing this story with Crystal Skull since 1992. And I thought, that's when I gave you my book. there's a lot of different funny stories with this whole thing. Like, you remember there was a television series briefly about a young Indiana Jones.
Yes. With the guy who played Powder later on.
Right.
It lasted about two or three seasons. It was pretty good. It was a lot of history involved with it, and I thought they did a pretty good job. But what bothered me about it was, when I first started working on my Indiana Jones series, I started with an old Indiana Jones, 90 years old. He had an eye patch, a cane, and a little dog. And you see him at the beginning of the story, and he launches into the story, and then you don't see him again until the very end. Well, George said, nobody wants to see an old Indiana Jones. And so take that out, which I did. And so this television series comes up a few years later, and how does it start? An old Indiana Jones, 90 years old, with an eye patch, a cane, and a dog.
I'd be pissed.
Yeah, what are you going to do, though, you know?
No, but I think that means he respects you an awful lot.
Yeah. I can't complain. You know, it was a great experience.
Wow, where do we go from there, Douglas?
Yeah, I don't know.
Where we go from there is how do any of us create a character like that that's so memorable and so archetypal?
Well, it is. It's very archetypical, and like to me though, you pegged it though with the. Of course, the old Indiana Jones would have a freaking eye patch.
Yes, of course he would. There has to be a story connected to that eye patch.
And then when you think of all the other things that Indiana has inspired, the numerous parodies, the cartoon references, he's become like an archetypical figure in his own right. Oh,
definitely. Yeah,
he has.
In fact, you look at Harrison Ford, who's played both the trickster and the hero, which
That's
is kind of interesting.
Good point.
To me, that would say that those archetypes are alive and well in Harrison himself.
Well, yeah. Oh, you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, I mean, even to kind of just go off on a tangent, there's a couple of things I've been thinking about during our conversation. I mean, first off, I can't even handle it. I'm sorry. I'm going to step away. I'm going to step away. Because there's, like, we were talking about the signs, and I was thinking about, you know, because the Indiana Jones is River Phoenix. That's the young Indiana Jones became the River Phoenix. And he's got all of, you know, his brother Joaquin was in that movie with the aliens.
Sure. Right.
With signs. Yeah. So it's a, there's a lineage there, but the name, both the... The, there's a lot of Christian symbolism as far as where the aliens and who they – I mean, even Strieber's book is called Communion.
Right.
You know. Yeah. But it's just – it's weird because it's subliminal. It looks intentional, but it's more like this, the universe – I mean, I probably never said this on record, but I'll go ahead and say it. I mean, it's there seems to be something where we're kind of all – it's what Shakespeare said, actors on a stage.
Right. Ooh. I mean, even Mel Gibson in Signs, wasn't he an ex-preacher?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Which so I mean, has a lot to do with his real life as well and his own beliefs and so
– Right.
It's just really weird. I mean, well, and you push Signs together with Passion of the Christ and –
Yeah. Or with Apocalypto.
Right, again, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
And you have the Mayan, the whole aspect of the crop circle. It's just weird. It gets really strange when you think about it. Because we have, like, all of these things that happen to people, like, bleed through into the fiction. So I was just wondering if you guys had anything planned like that.
Since we've tried to write novels about aliens, but somehow it... It's difficult.
I'm working on one right now, but I'm having trouble with it. I'm blocked on this story and the transition from the first part to the second part, and it's challenging. I'll probably break through it, but it's right now the aliens are blocking it.
Well, I'm sure we're getting close to the end of our 42 minutes.
We are out of time, and I suppose
this has been fun.
It has been, and we thank you very much for everything.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on. And in light of the writer's block, I think you just need to listen to the trickster's voice, who you says is that of synchronicity in your sync book face. Thank you. You've been listening.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Of course.
You've been listening to 42 Minutes of Production of Sync Book Radio on thesyncbook.com. For more information about the Sync Book, our guest, check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com/42minutes. If you like what you hear and would like to support the show, follow the links on the website to the donation page. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful Tuesday.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you. Hey, send us the link, too, when it goes up.
Yeah,
you bet. Yeah,
of course. Okay.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thanks
Good
for joining
night.
Us. This was a lot
Thank
of fun.
You. It really was.
Yeah, we enjoyed
Thanks
it.
For right staying now. Up.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem.
Bye.
Bye-bye.